Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey, folks, welcome to another edition of Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today, we have the pleasure of visiting with Robin Parks, who is with the Mountain Lion Foundation, a topic that we've been very much focused on in the last month. And it's really great to have him to come up from San Diego and visit with us today. Thanks, Robin. Really appreciate you being here.
You're very welcome. Thanks for hosting me.
Before we get into today's guest, let me get the announcements out for today. Robin will be available later today at 4 o'clock for an in-person walk-and-talk Q&A at the corner of Manzanita and Ogram. That's in Painted Cave, right off of Painted Cave Road. That's Manzanita and Ogram. That's at 4 o'clock today. Parking is limited, but anyone can come on up there. You don't have to be reservations or anything like that. And then at 7 o'clock tonight, an online presentation will be available through Zoom. The link's available at Mountain Ember Team. That's all one word, mountainemberteam.com. And that starts promptly at 7 o'clock. No registration required. All of these presentations are at no charge, sponsored by the Wildland Residents Association and the Mountain Ember Team in Painted Cave. So with that, Robin, thank you for taking time out to be with us today. And Ted, you've got the questions.
Well, Robin, I think to start off, it would be interesting to hear about the Mountain Lions Foundation and how it got its start, and what is exactly you folks do?
Thank you. The Mountain Lion Foundation is based in Sacramento, but they have pretty much a nationwide reach, certainly out through the entire West, and certainly through all of California. And on multiple fronts, on multiple levels, in multiple ways, they work to preserve and save mountain lions and keep the species alive and keep it from going extinct. They help with public awareness, public education, lots of legislation, lots of contact with the politicians and a variety of animal support groups, California Fish and Wildlife, a long, long list of other people to try to protect mountain lions.
So I guess the next question is, how are the mountain lions threatened throughout the United States? Are they still under bounty in some areas? Have that been stopped? I know they're protected in California very strongly. I'm curious about the rest of the country.
It varies from state to state. There are plenty of, as you mentioned, California, we are, to use a phrase, we are enlightened here. We don't kill mountain lions. You don't bounty hunt mountain lions anymore. And some of that, as you may know, got started all the way back with Ronnie Reagan. He was the one who started a lot of things, started that process, and it's come a long way since then. But in other states, there are still hunting seasons for mountain lions. There are extremely limited laws to protect them. You know, poaching or whatever word you want to use is certainly allowed, and it just varies wildly from state to state.
So how is the mountain lion population doing throughout the country? Is it burgeoning in the way it is here in our local area, or are they fairly rare in many other areas?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a point that I want to make, and I will stress tonight, nowhere in the United States is the mountain lion population exploding or burgeoning or bursting apart at the seams or whatever. That's not happening anywhere, any place. What is happening, and what is happening to explain the so much recent contact, to include here in your town, what is happening is that as we humans continue to take their habitat, as things like forest fires, lack of water, climate change, lack of ability for mountain lion populations to get to other populations for mating because of highways and whatever, all these factors are diminishing the mountain lion population. And that situation is grim. And there are a couple of fairly recent studies just a couple of years ago that are estimating that mountain lions in Southern California, from Los Angeles County and below, where I live in San Diego, mountain lions will be extinct down there because they can't make it. They just can't make it. The number one problem is lack of habitat. Number two problem is lack of genetic diversity. They can't breed with other populations. So for sure, I want to get the point across that nowhere the situation here and elsewhere in California and everywhere, it's not because the mountain lion population is doing so well and it's exploding. It is rather because we take their habitat, we are forcing them to go to places they would not normally go. And that's why we are seeing them now, and that's why we will see more of them.
Well, I don't think it's just taking their habitat. The wildfires are a big component of this because we're seeing a lot of wildlife.
Oh, in certain places, yeah. it's a big thing. But climate change as well, with a lot of water, the drought, the whole drought situation, yes, that is a big part of it in certain places.
And we're going to see more wildfires this summer with the way things are shaping up.
Yeah, so apparently it's more drought too, yes.
Further push wildlife into the populated areas. Ted.
So what we're seeing locally, and I'm sure that you're well aware of this, Robin, and that is the fact that that we have a number of pregnant females and females with kits in our area, and whereas in the past we've only seen them very seldom, have we seen them? Usually, we only see one particular lion in the area. Now we have multiple lions in the area, and of course it's making people think that their population is burgeoning. But I think that the factors that you're mentioning have a great deal to do with that, and the fact that we have a habitat here that is fairly well suited to them. In other words, we have a lot of acreage that is that the humans are not in, and there's a fairly adequate water supply. And I think that everything that that is helpful for them to survive is present here. I was told at once by Fish and Game or Fish and Wildlife official that every canyon that has water year-round in it usually has a pair of mountain lions that live in that area. And because they are so nocturnal and cryptic, we don't see them so much, but that doesn't mean they're not there. But now what we're seeing is them coming into our communities, and we're catching them on these game cams and that sort of thing, which means that the technology is advanced so that we're getting view of them, but it's not so much the fact that anything is really different than it has been in a long time. I'd like to get your comment on that, Rob.
That is a good point. These days, you know, there's a Ring doorbell camera or a trail camera or some sort of surveillance camera just everywhere, and they have such broad coverage, and they're catching, you know, lions doing this and lions doing that, and there's a good possibility that, you know, the lions have been doing that all along. It's just nobody got them on camera from doing it. So, yes, that is part of the explanation as to why, you know, we're seeing more of these. And I want to assure you that what is going on here in Santa Barbara and Goleta and Painted Cave, whatever, this is not a unique thing. There are mountain lions, there are several places in California, and recently I've been to some of those, who were having similar type of things, where cats showing up, you know, in a residential area and being very comfortable there. And down toward East San Diego County, where I live, there's one particular cat that likes to sleep on the side of the street in a residential area, and people just have to kind of drive around it and look at it. There are other places where this frequency, you know, of contact is much more occurring. So what is happening here is not a unique situation at all. And again, all those factors that we talked about, drought, climate change, et cetera, all that is having an effect at all these other places. So you again, do not feel like you know, this is an anomaly, or that, you know, the mountain lion population is so so great, so large up here, because it is happening in several places in California now.
So so the next thing on is that how unusual is it for mountain lions to break into a home or come into a home as they did in my home just before Christmas?
Yes, I figured you'd ask that question.
a most uncomfortable situation.
Yes,
that,
it was.
It did not last very long, thanks to my wife's bravery and her insight into how to dealing with that animal. But the thing is that we can laugh about it now, but seeing an animal in the bedroom is definitely a life-changing experience.
I'm sure it was. Well, I have several things to say regarding that. First of all, yes, that was a highly unusual event, highly unusual. Now, having said that, it has happened. In the 15 years, give or take, that I've been doing this kind of work, and I don't at all mean to be, I'm not Mountain Lion Central, I'm not, a central news point or whatever, but I get an awful lot of information and reports and about mountain lion events and a lot of news feeds and whatever. A mountain lion going into a house, it certainly is a rare thing. However, it is not, it certainly has happened. It is not without precedent. Just recently, within the last few weeks, I'm aware of one incident, I want to say it was in Colorado, where a mountain lion happened to walk by a guy's house. The guy had a big picture window, and the guy happened to be a deer hunter that liked to kill deer and liked to cut their heads off and mount them on the wall. Lots of them. So the mountain lion walked by this guy's house in the picture window and looked inside and saw about 10 deer heads on the wall, and figured, look, this is a place I need to get into. And so the cat broke in, and of course he found out that the deer weren't alive anymore and had to leave. But in that case, there was a break, there was a B&E, a breaking and entry into the place. There is also
how did the lion do that? In that case,
bust right through the window,
did the same thing, just broke right through the window.
Yeah, broke through the window, okay. Which they certainly have the strength, and capability to do.
Well, hold on to that thought. We've gone long here, and I've got to take a break here. We'll be back with Robin Parks here with the Mountain Lion Foundation. Ted Adams, Mike Williams on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290 FM 96.9. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we have the pleasure of talking with the gentleman, Robin Parks, who is a Mountain Lion Foundation advocate and specialist, and he is involved with mountain lions a great deal. And because we've had quite a bit of mountain lion attention in our region recently, he has come up from San Diego to talk to the community and talk to us here on Community Alert. And so, Robin, to continue our chat, we were talking about the mountain lions coming into people's homes and how incredibly rare that is.
Yes.
And in my case, I had a small dog acting as bait that was standing out on the other side of a window, and the lion just busted through the window and grabbed the dog. So, but these situations don't happen very often, and I don't think that the public should be overly concerned with the animals coming in their house, but they have to realize that that the windows that we see as barriers propose very little barrier to a large predator, and so it's a good idea to be conscious of that, and perhaps and put up a screen in the lower part of the window, or to make sure that the small dogs and cats are not presenting themselves to these mountain lions, because they are out there, and they will come in if they're hungry enough or given the opportunity enough. So we just have to be extra conscious, I think, Robin.
Good points all. That's exactly it. And particularly if you know you live in mountain lion country, which you all do up here, there are certain precautions you got to take for your animals, whether they be dogs or cats, or if you got goats in the backyard or llamas or whatever it is, or certain protections with you know, keeping them in at night in certain enclosures and, you know, keeping them safe. And it is truly a rare event for a mountain lion to do that. But again, not unheard of. Sometimes the incident that happens is not necessarily harmful, or it's not necessarily no one gets hurt. But there have been over the years a couple incidents where, for whatever reason, someone leaves a door open for a while. And I am aware of one case where some people came back from the grocery store or church or whatever it was, came back and they walk into the living room and there's a mountain lion sleeping on their couch. So it, you know, and it just like you, I mean, it scared them to death and it was a life changing experience, but it does happen. And Ted, I want to talk a little bit about your situation there. I'm certain glad that turned out okay. I'm certain glad your dog made it. It was lucky that he did, for sure. It was, your wife certainly, stepped up and jumped right into the fray of things. I want to talk a little bit about the bear spray that was used. I know that there's a good portion of what I give in my full presentation talks about countermeasures and deterrence and safety tips, do's and don'ts, things like that. And one of the things that I really stress is, I know for generations people have been very enamored with bear spray. Bear spray is not necessarily the best thing to use for mountain lions in a situation where a mountain lion is being encountered. And, of course, as you guys found out, the bedroom's going to smell like bear spray for quite a while here.
Still.
But a very good, cheap, easy-to-use, handy, small, handheld device is a marine air horn. Marine not as in U.S. Marine Corps, but as in nautical marine. And you can get these at Big Five, REI, Walmart, roughly $13 or so, handheld. And you, if a mountain lion is encountered, you push the button, and all sorts of noise goes off. And unless you are prepared for it, you will wet your pants. And, of course, the mountain lion is not prepared for it as well. And it's immediate. And unlike bear spray, you have to aim with the sound. With the air horn, you don't. They're just a simple button that you push. With bear spray, it takes a little bit of time, maybe only seconds, but it takes just a little bit of time for that to take effect. An air horn is instantaneous. And with bear spray, if you are out in the open somewhere, you have to be very careful to know the winds, because you can easily spray something and it blow back on you, and then you are the victim and all that. And being prior law enforcement that I am, I know that such things can happen like that, and it's a rather embarrassing story that I'm not going to go through here. But you can, things can blow back on you with bear spray and pepper spray and such things. So one item that amongst several, that I really push is these air horns.
Well, one of the things that we discovered with the bear spray is obviously with the advice, don't use bear spray indoors. But another thing is that bear spray actually has a particular way of delivery. It doesn't shoot out a straight spray. It actually creates a fog barrier between you and whatever it is you're spraying.
Yes, you're correct. You are right.
And so what happens is that you're not really applying it. What you're doing is you're filling the void between yourself and the animal with the spray. And what we saw with the mountain lion that we had contact with was that the spray really didn't have any immediate effect on the animal. It didn't even blink, much less cough or turn its head or anything. I mean, Tracy and the animal never really lost eye contact with one another. One of the things that Tracy expressed that I think is interesting is that she felt that the lion understood that she was trying to help the lion get the hell out of that house, because the lion was completely freaked out with the idea that it was in the house with human beings until Tracy closed the door to the bedroom when she went to get the spray. When she came back, she opened it up and the lion was lying down, getting ready to feast on the dog. And she just walked in and walked up the lion and just sprayed it, within a couple of feet away. So the lion then lost interest in the dog and was very interested in Tracy and separating herself from Tracy. Mm-hmm. And Tracy took the moment to sweep the dog out of the way and open the door. And at that time, she said the animal and her were in complete rapport. And the animal disappeared into the night.
I don't doubt it.
Well, let's keep in rapport with our clock here. Let's take our break now while we have a chance. We'll be back in just a minute with Robin Parks, Mountain Lion Foundation, with Ted Adams, Mike Williams on Community Alert, Not If, But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290 FM 96.9.
Hey, folks, welcome back. Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we had the good fortune of visiting with Robin Parks with the Mount Lion Foundation. He's come a long way to talk with us today. Appreciate him being here. And Mike, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, I want to repeat to this afternoon's activities with Robin. Mountain Lion Foundation, Living with Mountain Lions. So there'll be a walk and talk this afternoon in Painted Cave at 4 o'clock. It'll be at the intersection of Manzanita and Ogram, right off of Painted Cave Road. Again, that's 4 o'clock, walk and talk. Reservations are not required, but parking is a little limited. And then tonight, the same presentation will be available on Zoom at 7 o'clock. The link is at mountainemberteam.com. That's mountainemberteam.com, and you can pick up the program there. And it's available at mountainemberteam.com, co-sponsored by the Wildland Residents Association and the Painted Cave Mountain Ember Team. Their website, mountainlion.org, mountainlion.org. So I think I've covered everything there. Ted, back to you.
Well, Robin, I kind of want to turn it over to you so that you can give us some ideas that you have. I pretty much dominated with questions, so I'm thinking maybe there's some things you'd like to cover that we haven't covered.
No problem. There are two or three or more points I do want to cover. I certainly cover these in greater detail in the Zoom presentation that I'll have. But going back to a minute for your encounter, one thing that I stress when I talk to law enforcement people is that, you know, typical law enforcement actions and behavior is if there's a bad situation, a bad person, whoever it is, you surround it, you know, seal off the exits, and then do something. Well, with a mountain lion, and you or your wife sort of encountered this, with a mountain lion, if you leave an exit open, there's a good chance the cat will take it. If you're standing in the way of the exit, the cat may come through you, around you, over you, whatever. But if you can leave an exit for a cat to exit from a situation, whether it be a backyard, a barn, you know, a culvert, whatever it is, if there's some situation, the cat will certainly try to find it. Secondly, an important safety tip that I want to get out. I just was informed last night that there was a member of your community that had a very unusual encounter with a cat while walking on a hiking trail somewhere, and she had her little dog with her, and a mountain lion jumped out of nowhere, brushed against her leg, walked a few feet in front of her, and sat down and looked at her. This is just very unusual for something like that to happen, but the lady did the right thing. I don't know if she had had training or been to a lecture or what, but she grabbed up the dog so the dog was at least not in immediate right then danger, and then she started making noise and growling and jumping up and down, you know, being loud, being big as she could be, and there was several minutes of back and forth between the lion, lots of eye contact, you know, closer distance, further distance, a lot went on, but the encounter did end with no harm being done to anything. And that measure of, if you encounter a mountain lion somewhere, hiking, biking, camping, triking, whatever you do, you encounter a mountain lion, that the number one safety tip is to, you look big, you jump up and down, you know, have your arms way up, take a jacket off and wave it. The bigger you look, you know, the louder you are, the meaner you look, the more bad words you say, that whole the attitude that you can project really has an effect. It is the number one safety tip in having an encounter with a mountain lion. And I learned that several ways, but several years in New Mexico when I was talking to a presentation, I talked to a retired deputy who worked in Northern California and Southern Oregon for 35 years. And in that 35 years, he had 11 separate close encounters with mountain lions. In each of those 11 separate encounters with a mountain lion, he did that. Looked big, waved things, jumped up and down, screamed loud, make noise. In each of the 11 incidents, every time, no deputies eaten, no cats killed, no shots fired, no ammunition put down range in the civilian community, no civilians outraged. It all turned out just fine. And so that's the number one tip that I want to, there are others, but that's the number one tip I want to get across in this type of interview setting.
Well, I think that that's very appropriate. And I know that Nina, I know the woman well. She is an ex-Forest Service employee, and I guess she had had some experience and some training in the past, which gave her the knowledge that she used to get. And she's a diminutive person. She's not very large, but she made herself very large. And also she said she was growling and as guttural as she possibly could be.
Yep.
And to good event there.
I'm curious, Robin, about I realize a mountain lion is not a domestic animal, but it's still a cat. What cat-like features that we're familiar with because we have domesticated cats carry over to mountain lions, if any?
More than you would expect.
That's okay.
More than you would expect. They are extremely curious animals. They just like your house cat is. I mean, they love to get into things. They love to explore things. There are lots of encounters that, and I want to be careful. I don't want to put too much human characteristics on cats either. But there are lots of encounters where it's not based on hostility or aggression.
Well, that's where I'm getting
to. It's curiosity. Who are you? I've never seen an animal on 2 feet before, on 2 legs before. What are you doing in my territory? There's lots of curiosity. They have the catnip gene. Mountain lions can react to, they will react to catnip. That's not a defense.
Right.
Okay. But they can react to it. They make a lot of sounds. Mountain lions are one of the largest small cats. They're not considered a large cat, they're the larger of the small cats.
Right.
They purr. They make about 32 different kinds of sounds. And some of them sound remarkably like a house cat. So there are lots of, there's only a handful of genes difference in addition to the size, of course.
So that would raise the next question of what are the telltale signs that you're dealing with a cat that's just being inquisitive and by nature just checking things out?
Oh, good question.
As opposed to one that's about ready to rip your head off.
Okay, good question. If a lion is stalking and hunting you,
mm-hmm.
Lions are trained by their moms. Their operating system is they attack from the rear and from the quarters. And in most cases, if an attack on a human is done, it's done from the rear and the quarters. And the first thing you know is the lights go out because the mountain lion has your head
right
in its mouth. Okay, now, having said that, if you encounter a mountain lion in front of you out somewhere, it most likely means something else is in play, curiosity. What are you doing in my territory? Are you going to hurt my kids? Are you
right.
going to eat me? Should I eat you? I've never seen a person, an animal, and all this stuff that's going on. It doesn't mean that everything's going to wind up, kissy-kissy or anything, but it doesn't mean that an attack is necessarily imminent.
Well, that raises my third question, then we got to take a break, and that is, as this wildlife gets more and more exposed to humans, and our way of doing things, whether it be cars and our domestic animals and our behaviors, does that start to cause their behavior to change where they become more accustomed to the way we are?
Oh, over time, yes.
Yeah.
Over time. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about imminent attack.
Imminent attack. Okay, we'll take a break right now. Imminent attack, we'll come back with that in just a second on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Visiting today with Robin Parks, Field Representative, Mountain Lion Foundation. Their website, mountainlion.org, mountainlion.org. We'll be back in just a minute on KZSB AM 1290 FM 96.9.
Well, welcome back to the program. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Robin Parks, who is with the Mountain Lion Foundation, and talking to us about a lot of things, mountain lion behavior, and how we can deal with the mountain lion if we come in contact with them unexpectedly. And I think that's where we're going right now, Robin.
Yes, a point I wanted to make is, as I mentioned, because you encounter a mountain lion, one comes up to you, crosses your trail, whatever it is, doesn't necessarily, particularly if it's in front of you, doesn't mean that an attack, the encounter will end with an attack. However, I want to stress generally speaking, there are three indicators that an attack is imminent if you encounter a mountain lion. Not to say there couldn't be others, but generally all the history, people who study this type of thing, whatever, there are three indicators. One is, the most obvious one, is if you see a mountain lion charging at you at about Mach 4 with its mouth open, okay, you got a problem.
You might be dinner.
And you got to do something right then, because it will close the distance, you know, very quick. You got to get back in your car. You'll never outrun a mountain lion, so don't do that. You know, you're going to have to look big, use the air horns, you know, whatever you got, whatever other means of defense you got. But if particularly if it is a close distance. But that is the number one thing. Number two, if a cat appears to be stalking you and that he's circling you, closing the distance some, circling you some more, closing the distance, he's eyeing you like a rack of ribs or something. That's what's going on, and that is another danger sign that an attack is imminent and you need to do something. And the third one is something like your house cat does with a mouse. If it closes in on you at a fairly short distance and does the little, he's hunched down on the ground, the tail is twitching a little bit, the hindquarters twitching a little bit, ears twitching a little bit, the cat is preparing to launch. And with a mountain lion, with a healthy adult mountain lion that works out at the gym frequently, they can leap upwards of, from a dead stop, they can leap upwards of 40 feet if they want. So those three things, the closing attack at Mach 4, circling, you know, closing the distance, and then third, the little cat maneuver where they're twitching and stuff at close distance, those three indicators say you got a problem, that an attack is imminent. Failing those three, you most probably do not have an attack imminent.
So they have the capability of jumping on the roof of your house, your garage, or whatever.
A mountain lion, if they want, can jump 20 feet up, straight vertical. Like your house cat, you clap your hands, the cat jumps if it wants to jump. That's why a lot of fencing and stuff needs to be different. It doesn't necessarily have to be 20 feet high, but it has to be constructed in a certain way to prevent the mountain lion.
Now, are they like domestic cats where they like to be high?
They're not leopards. They don't live in trees. But they do like height, and there are many times they attack from a higher elevation going to a lower elevation.
Well, that's a good
piece.
So
I have to inject something here, and that is that when the mountain lion left the room, he left by a balcony, and he jumped 50 or 60 feet to the ground, because it's a good three stories off the ground, and we live at the top of a chimney in a canyon.
Wow.
And it's way down there. And that lion, and it jumped into the dark. I don't know what their sight capabilities are. I think they're much better than ours.
Yes,
are.
They are.
But
yeah,
it was raining, very stormy, and it just threw itself off that balcony. And the next day I could see that it landed down in the canyon a long ways down there. And they are like house cats in that they don't lose their balance. They land on their feet. And that animal landed and was sprinting as it hit the ground and disappeared into the night. I mean, it was amazing.
I don't doubt it at all. They're remarkable animals. And the whole God's engineering team, when they put all this stuff together, They just put a tremendous amount of power in the back end, the back transmission, the front legs and the jaws, just all sorts of stuff that gives the mountain lion just some extraordinary capabilities.
Absolutely.
Well, very good. So let's talk about some prevention stuff here. We got a couple minutes. We'll take a break and we'll finish up. We live in a rural area. We're not able to put up a lot of fences and walls and that kind of thing. And an animal that can jump 20 feet, it's not going to make much difference anyway. What are the most effective ways that people can set up some perimeter protection on their property?
Well, certainly almost any kind of fence is better than nothing. But there are devices that you can get. There are a couple of things. One is called a gadfly gadget or gadfly noisemaker. You can find these online. Gadfly, G-A-D-F-L-Y. They are very small. I have one which I show in a presentation. They're very small, but they can be posted upon doors, fence posts, gate posts, barn doors, whatever. And they're motion activated. They can, something like I think the range is 30 meters out. It can be motion activated, and apparently it makes a god awful noise, even worse, louder, more intense, more aggravating than an air horn. Those are proving to be very, very effective. Now again, they're motion sensor, so if somebody walks by,
right,
it could go off. But you know, it's the way it is. There are different things, particularly for people who have hobby animals, goats, llamas, whatever. There are things called fox lights, which were developed by the Australians. And there are different models. There's batteries and solar powered and nuclear powered and all sorts of stuff that you can get to power these things. Small light, perhaps 6 inches in diameter, and they have an unusual frequency by flashing lights on and off in different patterns. And mountain lions, the theory is, and there's evidence to prove it, mountain lions see that and say, well, there's a human presence over there, and so I'm going to avoid that area. So it is a little bit different for a residential area than it is a farmhouse, because there are things you can do with the farm place that maybe you can't do with with higher fences,
something
enclosures.
Something like a barricade flasher light.
It is. This sounds simplistic, but you can get devices online to a sprinkler system. Mountain lions are cats. They are not afraid of water. If they want to cross a body of water, they will do so. Okay, but they don't like to get wet, and they don't like to be sprayed. So there are systems you can get if they're motion activated, and a sprinkler system comes on to spray the cat. Those can work. Flashing lights, motion sensor activates light. Lights aren't the best, but I'm not going to say no.
But it's going to mess up their night vision.
It messes up. It's something that's shocking. It is not the most effective thing,
right,
but it's in the book. It's in the list.
Because I could see that.
There's an online film clip of a mountain lion walking down a residential street, and it's turning on the light sensors as it walks down, and the lights just keep coming on. Right, it doesn't pay any attention to, but
no,
all.
No.
But
well, they're going to get used to it.
Well, over time,
lion that's
yes,
had previous experience.
Over time, it will, and they will get used to it. Particularly if they find out, well, okay, the first couple of times, yeah, I'll move away, but then after that, no harm comes to me, so I just won't worry about it. So noise, in most cases, noise is better than lights.
Mm-hmm.
Water is also good.
Well, I want to talk about who the mountain lion's predators are when we come back. We're going to take our last break here. And Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Visiting today with Robin Parks. He's the field representative for the Mountain Lion Foundation. We'll be back in just a minute with Ted Adams, Mike Williams on KZSB AM 1290 FM on 96.9.
Hey, folks, welcome to the last segment of the show. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're visiting with Robin Parks, who is a spokesperson for the Mountain Lion Foundation. Has been telling us a lot of interesting things today, and he'll be talking to us a couple of times throughout the day. And Mike will have more about that, Mike.
Well, my question was, who is the natural predator to the mountain lion? It seems to me his only real fear is humans. Is that true?
That is true, and that's something I want to bring up. Really, the only predator that that is after mountain lions is humans, who want to kill them. And this is something that I go through in more detail in a presentation. But everybody needs to know there are laws. There are state laws in California. SB 132 is one of the biggest that applies to all California, applies to all law enforcement, applies to fish and wildlife. That protect mountain lions. So you can't just shoot a mountain lion because you want to or because one is in your backyard or you see one, you know, when you're hiking. There are laws which protect them. And again, that goes all the way back to Ronald Reagan and got a lot of effort forward to that. So they have protections. There are certainly fish and wildlife has certain policies and procedures where if you talk to them, they will explain to you something called a three-step policy, where if you're losing animals to predation, they're losing goats, chickens, whatever you got, there are certain steps that you are required to do to show good faith that you are protecting your animals and not just letting them run free, because you cannot wave a goat steak in front of a mountain lion, make it easy for him, and then not expect the mountain lion to come in and get a goat steak. You just can't do that. So there are protections. Everybody needs to know that. The second real quick point I want to make is there is oftentimes a lot of fear, a deep-seated fear about mountain lions. Some of that fear is generated by hunters who want to hunt mountain lions. And they have a fantasy that, well, mountain lions are, you know, human killers and they stalk humans. And there's all sorts of legends and stuff about mountain lions that I go through in my presentation. But there are some things we need to be clear on. And one is, since 1895, in the United States and Canada, there have been 27 confirmed human fatalities as a result of a mountain lion attack. 1895, 27 humans. Do you realize, we all need to realize, we've got a whole lot more problems in this country killing people than mountain lions, and your odds of being, number one, attacked, and number two, killed by a mountain lion are about the same odds as me getting a date with Taylor Swift, okay? And it ain't going to work.
You just know that alcohol was involved in most of those.
It may have been.
It's like rattlesnake bites.
But with 27 people, I mean, there are more people. There are nearly as many people die each year with a vending machine falling on them. So the chances of you being, you know, they're not exactly human killers here, okay?
Right.
And we need to, and whoever, for whatever reason, if you encounter someone who has that idea, they're in the wrong, and you can set them straight.
Well, I think that's an important thing to get out there, that in over 200 years, roughly, 150 anyway, not much has happened. So you corner something, if you corner anybody, that you're going to have somebody come back at you. But just don't corner them and allow them the exit that you were talking about. Same thing with dealing with riots. Always provide the rioters with the outdoor, and that's the one they're going to take.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's working right now in Ukraine, but you know, we'll see what happens. You know.
Yeah, we will.
So Robin, I'd like to ask you a little bit about wolves versus mountain lions. When you mentioned the bad PR situation, I think that applies to wolves as well, except in ag country. And I think that the mountain lion has problems in ag country as well, because they will take down some of the middle-sized animals, where I think that perhaps the wolves who are traveling in packs actually will go after larger animals as well. How much of the fantasy of wolves and mountain lions attacking humans are pretty much the same? I mean, do you feel that, or do you feel like one or the other is getting a worse rap?
Oh, as bad as mountain lions have it, wolves have it much worse. And the history, you know, the long-term history of wolves being some evil animal goes back, you know, to medieval times, if not, you know, if not well beyond that. And if we're not careful in this country, wolves in several states. I mean, there are just almost no restrictions on killing them, no restrictions on hunting them. There's a very good chance wolves are just going to go extinct in this country because people want to kill them. And it goes all the way back, you know, years and years, and wolves associated with the devil and, you know, Little Red Riding Hood and I don't know what all else. But, yeah, no, they have it a lot worse.
Well, Robin, thank you very much for taking time out to be with us. I appreciate your effort. Robin will be available in person at the corner of Manzanita and Ogram at 4 o'clock this afternoon in Painted Cave. That's right off of Painted Cave Road in East Camino, Cielo. We'll see you then. And Ted, thank you very much. We'll see you next week as well on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster, here on KZSB, AM 1290 and FM 96.9. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department. Technical assistance is provided by Jim Williams and Richard Dugan. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and should not be interpreted as necessarily representing the opinions or policies of this station or sponsors. For further information, please call 805-964-7194 or visit wildlandresidents.org. Commercial use of this program is prohibited.